Side 3. On the advice front, here are some words in a format that became popular in men's magazines of the late 20th century. Normally, they would give you a list of things you should have done before you reached the point in your career whereby you could afford to buy the magazine in the first place. No one in the world has ever accomplished all the things these magazines suggested they should have done before the age of 30. If they had, they'd either be dead or too weird to talk to. Therefore, I've compiled a list of things you should definitely not do before the age of 30. If there is anyone out there that has done more than 15 of these things and survived, please don't get in touch. I scare easily. 101 things you shouldn't do before you're 30. 1. Commit suicide. 2. Attempt to remove your own appendix with a potato peeler. 3. Try to convince a group of children that you can speak Venusian. 4. Repeatedly perform the kiss of life on someone in a restaurant who doesn't need or want it. 5. Join a religious sect. 6. See if your goldfish can live in lager. 7. See if you can live in lager. 8. Apply for a job as a traffic warden. 9. Save up for a rainy day, but spend it on beer every time it rains. 10. Threaten an American policeman with a plastic machine gun in Miami for a laugh. 11. Suck fog through a sock. 12. Base your life around aromatherapy. 13. Watch afternoon TV. 14. Impersonate bacon frying at parties. 15. Do graffiti on the back of a Hell's Angels jacket while he's wearing it. 16. Sellotape a drunken friend to the ceiling. 17. See how much you can keep in your head by pushing things into your ears. 18. Learn to play harmonica with your nose. 19. Gargle with Swarfiga. 20. Attempt to fix your television by sticking a coat hanger in the back while it's turned on. 21. Tell people about your belly button fluff collection. 22. Eat tofu. 23. Try to enlarge your penis with a vacuum cleaner attachment. 24. Learn to play the riff from Smoke on the Water. 25. Do an open mic spot at a comedy club with improvised material based on the previous act. 26. Play poker with someone called the Professor. 27. Stick your face in a blender. 28. Stick your face to a blender. 29. Vote for a political party that you think has all the answers. 30. Go on a fun run. 31. Fill your best friend's shoes with very old yogurt. 32. Inject bean curd into your eyes. 33. Ask your girlfriend if she thinks there's some genetic reason for the fact that she's not as cute as her sister. 34. Stick your tongue in a main socket for a bet. 35. Forget to turn up for a date with Claudia Schiffer. 36. Sing karaoke. 37. Retire. 38. Have your teeth pierced. 39. Buy some drugs in a club toilet from a guy called Stretch. 40. Have sex with a stoat. 41. Put on a fake Swedish accent when visiting the dentist. 42. Become a world-famous rock star, then blow your head off. 43. Pant really hard, but look relaxed while waiting in the queue at the post office. 44. Learn to play the bagpipes. 45. Encourage any offspring to take up drumming. 46. Spray mount yourself to a bus. 47. Think people are interested in your dreams. 48. Take up dribbling as a hobby. 49. Stand on the central reservation of the M1 and spin until you're too dizzy to stand up. 50. Buy a car from anyone called Big Vinny. 51. Have Made in England tattooed on your forehead. 52. Sell both your kidneys to a Far East transplant hospital. 53. Leave school before puberty. 54. Join a street gang in South Central LA. 55. Have liposuction on your head. 56. Become a social worker. 57. Rely on trains. 58. Get really fat. 59, get really thin. 60, send a chain letter to 10 friends. 61, give your home away and go to live in a yurt in Wales. 62, find yourself subconsciously spotting a train next time you visit a station. 63, give up. 64, wear a garment you wore 8 years ago because it's a bit like something that's in fashion at the moment. 65, put a Femidom on your head and blow it up to the size of the Albert Hall. 66, expect to have a conversation on the internet that doesn't involve computers. 67, smear your ankles with goose fat and do a sponsored barefoot bungee jump. 68, try to ride a bike with your right hand on the left hand grip. 69, win a Blue Peter badge and wear it. 70, gather all your friends in one room, announce that you've won the lottery, and inform them that you won't be speaking to them anymore because they're all scum. 71. Decide that riding a unicycle is the coolest thing in the world. 72. Attempt to eat a live walrus. 73. Learn to juggle in order to amuse people and be popular at parties. 74. Try to chat up a girl across a crowded room by blinking obscenities in Morse code. 75. Go out with someone who has more problems than you. 76. Actually swallow the purple pill that a guy calls Stretch Soldier in the toilets. 77. Win a gaining competition just by standing in the audience. 78. Go white water rafting on an inflatable banana. 79. Go on a holiday with someone and attempt to patch up a romance. 80. Try a fat-only diet for 6 months and die of grease. 81. Give up your career in order to gain a PhD in Welsh. If you live in Wales, substitute Albanian. 82. Discover that you know all the words to American Pie. 83. Believe an election promise. 84. Try to potty train your cat. 85. Go to a boxing club in a pink tracksuit and pretend to be Annika Rice. 86. Tell everyone that Liverpool FC asked you to be their new striker, but you couldn't be bothered. 87. Discover that you have to fake an orgasm during a bout of self-gratification. 88. See how long you can leave the gas cooker on before lighting it safely. 89. Get married before you find someone you like. 90. Try to chat someone up in a James Cagney voice. 91. Sit down to reflect on your greatest achievement to date and discover that it was learning to blow your nose. 92. Fail to discover the difference between being tired and being bone idle. 93. Convince yourself that your best friend won't really mind if you only sleep with his girlfriend the once. 94. Drain all the blood out of your body to see how it feels. 95. Ask your bank manager for a loan while wearing a lime green chicken suit. 96. Invent a game called Pubic Dares and demonstrate it to your friends by setting fire to your crotch. 97. Spill your guts on an Oprah Winfrey-type show. 98. Actually believe that the title financial advisor isn't a euphemism for insurance salesman. 99. Look like you're 40. 100. Feel like you're 40. And 101, listen to this. Whoops, too late. Part 4. Planet Earth, the birthplace of mankind, and lager. Naturally, no chronicle of the human race and its doings will be complete without some mention of the place in which we do our doings. However, I have to be honest, although I'd love to write about the fabulous rose city of Petra, I haven't been there, so I can't. However, I've been to a couple of places. Here are my thoughts on them, for what they're worth. If they provide you with concise and insightful information about the world we live in, you should get out more. Australia. On the face of it, Australia's a fabulous place. Great weather, stunning scenery, cold beer, talented sportsmen and women, interesting wildlife, and a colossal reddish thing called Ayers Rock. However, the locals seem to have some strange ideas. Can someone explain something to me? Australian rules football. What rules? There aren't any. It's just a fight with a ball.
It's the scariest game in the world. And the height they jump. Call me perceptive, but if you can jump like that, I'm sorry, but someone in your family has been overly intimate with a kangaroo. And believe me, it's not easy. They can't half kick. American football players think British rugby players are insane. They're playing without the sort of armour they themselves use. If they ever witnessed the carnage of an Australian rules match, they'd probably pass out. Australians have a unique culture, but there are a number of salient questions about it that need answering. Tell me, is there such a thing as an unfair dinkum? Wagga Wagga. Is it really so good they named it twice? I remember the first time I saw a guy with a didgeridoo. I remember thinking, there is no way I'm ever going to mess with a guy that can play that without passing out. And they've got some seriously big fish over there. Call me a wuss, but if I go fishing, I don't want to catch anything that's bigger than me. And they've got an entire species of practical joke spiders over there called redbacks. These antisocial, multi-legged individuals hide under the toilet seat and bite your arse when you're at your most vulnerable. Then they run off, sniggering. There is virtually no animal in Australia that won't bite you given half the chance. I was doing a TV show over there, and a game warden gave me a fluffy little koala to hold. The bastard bit me! Even the teddy bears tried to eat you in Australia! Then there's bush tucker. That's some kind of screwed-up cuisine. These guys go out in the bush, dig maggots out of a tree, and eat them. They think it's dead clever that they can survive in the middle of nowhere by eating things that, if we saw them in England, we'd call the police! I'll tell you what's clever. Take some bloody sandwiches, mate. Australia's massive, but everyone lives around the edge. Probably because the middle bit's so shite. I went to Alice Springs on a shoot once, and believe me, this place is on the outskirts of nowhere. I have to tell you, Mad Max wasn't a film, it was a documentary. They don't play darts in the pubs there. They have punching each other in the head competitions. The women are not allowed to join in, though. They have to content themselves with dwarf throwing. When I was there, they came up with a new game called Red Dwarf Throwing. Apparently, I would have broken the record if I hadn't hit a barn on my way down. They say there are more venomous creatures than non-venomous creatures in Australia, so it's not the safest place in the world. However, if it's kangaroo skin slippers you want, there's no finer place on the planet. Scotland. Scotland worries me for a number of reasons. Firstly, it's the only country in the world whose national dress includes a concealed knife in the sock. There's a clue there, surely. And the kilt. Contrary to what people might say, the kilt is the most masculine item of clothing in the entire universe. Scotsmen wear kilts with nothing underneath, so that they can shag anything that moves as rapidly as possible without having to mess about with zips and buttons. And when I say anything that moves, I mean anything. To be fair, though, the Scots have invented a few nuances of polite behaviour that the rest of the world have adopted. The habit of placing a hand over your mouth when yawning, for example, originated in Scotland. Because let's face it, ladies, you don't want to be sitting there with your gob wide open if there's a big airy Scotsman and a kilt nearby. He'll be in there like a haggis down a drainpipe. They've even come up with a slight modification of the gesture that involves covering the mouth with the back of the hand. Place back of hand against mouth, thus leaving the fingers perfectly positioned to grasp the offending member as it lunges towards its target. Got ya, you wee bastard! And the sporran. Now, where did that come from? I'll tell you. The sporran represents a mad badger clamped to the genitals. Apparently, in ancient times, when a Highlander was feeling a bit peckish and fancied frying a quick badger, he would locate a set and dangle his genitals outside the entrance as bait, while regaling the badger with taunts such as, "Oh, what a crappy wee badger you are, and no mistake!" This would incense the badger, who would come flying out of the set, teeth first, and clamp itself onto the Highlander's genitals. The clansman would give a triumphant whoop, wipe the tears from his eyes, and run groin first into the nearest tree to stun the badger, who would then be prized off with a concealed knife and end up roasting over a cowpat fire. Guys, next time you see a sporran, I guarantee you'll go, "Eesh." The kilt is also used as a method of challenging an opponent. That's why it looks like a girl's skirt. It's to put the opposition at ease until you've bitten their lungs out. You can just see a Scotsman, kilt flapping in the breeze in the middle of New York, strolling through the rougher district of Spanish Harlem, just waiting for a Hispanic street gang to notice him. Whereupon, he'll stop. indicate his kilt with a nonchalant wave of his hand and say, "Oh, aye. And what are you going to do about it, then?" I've seen a lot of street fights in my time. But when the ambulance arrives, the guy they pick up is always a sporran-free zone. Never, ever mess with anyone wearing a kilt. The London Inferno. Three unconnected events recently prompted me to reassess the way I look at London. One was the fact that I was returning from the relative peace of the countryside. Two was that I had been reading Dante's Inferno. And three was a sudden spell of hot weather. I suddenly realised that London is hell. There are seven distinct levels to the purgatory that is London. The outer level is in the form of a massive black ring that circles the boiling core. Some call this ring Acheron, but most refer to it as the M25. Around this ring, the souls of the damned hurtle in a chaos of speeding, crashing metal in a desperate attempt to reach the inner levels, driven by the erroneous belief that things will be better there. They are not. The air throughout the London Inferno is perpetually tainted with noxious fumes and choking vapours that scarify the lungs and tear the eyes. Filthy, black, flapping shapes fill the air, diving amongst the throng to scavenge for scraps or to die messily beneath the crushing wheels of speeding cars as they swerve to avoid the black killer cabs that plough relentlessly through the streets, slaying all in their path. A black-hearted river runs through the centre of perdition, a stinking, swirling torrent crossed at intervals by crumbling bridges beneath which God's accountants swing on creaking ropes. There is a stark, bony figure on one side of this river, dressed all in black. He approaches lost souls, who are encouraged to press a silver coin into his skeletal hand, whereupon he will furnish them with a copy of the big issue. The next level is a maze of soot-grimed tunnels buried deep in the earth. Here, tormented shades are crushed and jostled, forced into metal cylinders, and left stewing in the dark, rat-infested tunnels as all hope drains from their wretched spirits and darkness seeps into their very souls. The third level is a scattered domain. Here and there throughout the inferno, you'll find the piteous huddles of those whose sin was the sin of penury. These wretches skulk in filthy corners and pools of excrement, muttering forlorn supplications to any that will listen. No one ever does. There is no compassion in hell. Then there is the dread level of the hedonists. This is a vast warehouse into which thousands upon thousands of souls are herded and crushed. They are fed a demonic potion that dooms them to dance until they drop to the rhythmic pounding of hell's generators under the coruscating flashes of phonic welders who are forever busy building the hurtling metal boxes in which the mad, teeming souls of the outer level are to be imprisoned. The next tier is but a room. This is the level of the malcontents, those who are dissatisfied with this state of mind. These wretches are fated to sit around a table and listen to the interminable babble of nonsense they generate as demons feed them an endless stream of tainted drugs through their noses. The room resounds with the vapid details of grand schemes that will come to naught and impassioned entreaties for some of the good stuff that made them feel okay for 20 seconds all those years ago. Yet another level is known as Oxford Street, where diverse souls are damned to search endlessly for something worth having at a reasonable price. If they succeed, they will attain salvation. No one yet has. The cheap thrill-seekers have a level all to themselves, for their title is in itself a paradox. In certain red-hued backstreets, sad individuals scurry from shadow to shadow, regaled from dark doorways by the strident entreaties of painted succubi, seeking a glimpse of beautiful female flesh and a decent drink. They will find neither, but are eternally doomed to pay dearly for weak cider and cellulite under the watchful gaze of a massive demon called Vinny, who carries a credit card swiper
and a lead pipe.
The bearers of false witness, the uncaring and the power-hungry, are banished to a large hall. Here they are dressed in ill-fitting grey suits, separated into opposing factions and ranged opposite each other in staggered tiers. Ordered thusly, they are doomed to forever argue across the dividing floor, with no side giving an inch or ever agreeing on anything. This is one of the saddest levels of the Inferno. There are subsidiary torments for those who finally manage to escape the confines of the endless ring around Purgatory. Once inside, they are doomed to drive down endless narrow streets, patrolled by sour-faced demons in uniform, whose only purpose is to prevent these exhausted, tormented souls from ever stopping. Those desperate enough to attempt to halt are cruelly hobbled with heavy iron boots and left there, immobilized for eternity. There is a freezing hell for those guilty of the sin of growing old. They are banished to concrete towers of ice, with nothing but a constant stream of final reminders to burn for fuel. However, they have no matches, and can only ignite the bills when young demons slip firebombs through their letterboxes. These sad souls are dying from the cost of living. Throughout the London Inferno, you will find the thief dens. Here, anything left unattended for more than 5 seconds will disappear forever. And in the streets, watches and jewellery are torn from the bodies of any foolish enough to be so adorned by drug-crazed imps. Those that escape the clawed snatchers are stopped by the roving officers of perdition in their stark black uniforms, who will rummage roughly through your soul for any sign of guilt. They rarely fail to perceive some evidence of culpability and regularly drag screaming souls off to their noisome dungeons, where a peculiar kind of gravity causes their prisoners to endlessly fall downstairs and walk into doors. Another stratum awaits the wannabes and poseurs, who will find the gates of their imagined heaven barred by a large devil in a tuxedo, who will repeat endless catechisms about a mythical list upon which their names do not now and never will appear. Their pathetic pleas involving obvious mistakes and don't-you-know-who-I-ams forever fall on deaf and dispassionate ears. There is also a two-dimensional level to the Inferno, as thin as cheap paper. Here, everything is black and white, and souls are richly torn apart in print as punishment for the sin of being interesting. It is here that every bad photograph anyone has ever had taken will appear. The demons that run this level of purgatory smell of smoke and whiskey and suffix everyone's names with their incorrect age and marital status. Minos, minus the charm. This is the London Inferno. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here. Liverpool. Naturally, this chronicle would be woefully inadequate without a literary hallelujah to that diadem of cities, the centre of the known universe, the spiritual home of chirpy banter, Liverpool. I owe a great deal to Liverpool, so much so that the fact that Liverpool owes me 2 bikes, 1 car, 2 videos and a telly, a set of plug spanners, a wallet from Greece, a leather duffel bag full of dirty washing nicked from Liverpool station, and a bag of assorted groceries, means nothing. Nil, nada, zilch, when set against the immeasurable benefits I gleaned, survival-wise, from an upbringing in Toxteth. They say, see Naples and die. Such was the beauty and cosmopolitanism of Naples, that once you'd seen it, you'd pretty much seen it all. There's a similar saying about Toxteth, but it has a far more literal meaning. I think the next Olympics should be held in Liverpool. There'd be so many new sports we could introduce. The 400-metre legging it from the scene of the crime. The multiple dole claim. The Beatles medley relay. We could have cycle races where you have to get the lock off the bike first. Instead of weightlifting, we'd have shoplifting. Synchronised graffiti could be a demonstration event, and the rules for the boxing tournaments would have to be modified to include nutting the bastard and sticking the boot in. It would help the city's economy no end with all the foreign TV crews turning up. We could nick all the cameras and flog them at boot sales. We'd definitely have a new world record for the marathon if it went through Toxteth, although the competitors would probably all come out the other side without any trainers. The only reason the Mersey runs through Liverpool is that if it walked, it'd get mugged. The only problem I can see would be getting the Olympic torch into the stadium without some guy borrowing it to light a joint. Forgive me, Liverpool. You know I'm only joking. I love you. Although some of your cuisine can leave a bit to be desired. There's a meal in Liverpool called Scouse. It's made of whatever happens to be left over from last night's Scouse, plus an extra potato. That's why Scousers are called Scousers. They used to use Liverpool for propaganda purposes during the war, to show how ineffective the German bombers were, because it used to look just the same, no matter how much you bombed it. There used to be a saying about Liverpool, if it's not bolted to the ground, it'll get nicked. That is totally unfair. We had a family car for years that was never stolen. It was never driven either. It was bolted to the ground. There's a pub in North Liverpool where you can go, and if you have a word with the right geezer, you can order pretty much anything you want to be stolen to order. It's a great system. My cassette player broke down once, so I popped in and ordered a new one. Unfortunately, he nicked the broken one from my house and sold it back to me. It's amazing. You can walk right across Liverpool without leaving the scene of the crime. They've got a unique concept of diplomacy in Liverpool. It consists of saying, "Nice doggy," until you can find a big rock. However, Scousers are nothing if not resourceful. A friend of mine came up with a strong contender for the worst idea ever award. I can sum it up in three words. Rats, milk, cheese. He figured out that rats were cheap and easy to breed, so he started a rat farm in his bedsit, milked them, and made cheese in his bath. And it worked. And he got people to try it. And they said it was all right. Then he told them it was rat's milk cheese, and they threw up on his carpet. He couldn't face the idea of cleaning so much sick off the carpet, so he just sprayed the puddles with rubber solution and peeled them up, which gave him another idea. So he phoned a practical joke company and is now spending the millions he made from inventing fake rubber sick. And if you believe that, you're not a Scouser. Part 5. How to be really annoying. Some people seem to have a natural talent for being incredibly annoying. It's like a weird aptitude they possess. Something that gives them the ability to wind you up with a subtle glance or a throwaway comment. And sometimes you just wish you could annoy them back, but you can't. You're just too nice. The following section might be of use if you ever want to really annoy someone. I'm not advocating that you do this. Far from it. In fact, if you only did half the things that follow, you would swiftly become the most hated person in the known universe. Instead, use this as a guide to what not to do if you want to have friends. Reply to everything someone says with, "That's what you think." Lend your car to a friend and then report it stolen for a laugh. Always pay for everything in 5 pence pieces. Finish everything you say with the words, "In accordance with the prophecy." Write X equals buried treasure all over someone's roadmap. If you're going to a party, collect a bunch of winos, take them with you, tell the host they're a hot new band, and leave them there. Phone a tabloid newspaper and make an appointment to show them photographs of their editor in bed with two transvestites. Phone back soon after and cancel the appointment, saying you've accepted a very generous offer from their main rivals. If you're doing a presentation to important clients, occasionally bob your head like a parakeet. If you know any fitness freaks, tell them they're looking tired and ill every time you see them. Stand on the pavement and point a hairdryer at passing cars to see if they slow down. Go to a public demonstration of faith healing, get up on stage and tell the guy you're deaf. When he lays on the hands to heal you, scream and blunder around the stage saying you've gone blind as well. If he grabs you again, collapse and say you've lost the use of your legs. During a learned lecture, occasionally snigger and mutter, "Yeah, right," in a sarcastic tone. Anytime someone tells you a joke, say, "Oh, God, not that old chestnut." If you're on a jury, catch the defendant's eye, grin, and draw your finger across your throat. If someone dials a wrong number and calls you by mistake, have a long and involved discussion with the caller about the person they asked for, saying how worried you are about their little problem and how you hope you can keep the police out of it. If the caller thinks you're a restaurant and wants to order a takeaway, take the order. If you're on holiday, introduce yourself to the most obnoxious people you meet. using the name of someone you don't like. Give them this person's address and invite them and their families to come and stay for as long as they want to. Go to a restaurant and order a rare steak. When it arrives, send it back and ask them to cook it just a little more. Do this about 13 times until you can finally demand to see the manager and ask him how on earth he expects you to eat such an appalling lump of inedible charcoal. Anytime anyone coughs, however slightly, grab them and insist on performing the Heimlich manoeuvre for at least 5 minutes, no matter how much they protest. If you meet a fascist bigot who goes on and on about the homeless and how they should pull themselves together and get jobs, simply burn his house down while he's playing golf. See how he likes it. When no one's looking, move the hockey, the throwing line, back a foot in a serious darts pub, then sit back and take the mickey out of all the players for being so useless. Tip, wear dart-proof clothes. Stand behind a crowd of people playing a triv machine in a pub and shout out all the wrong answers in a very insistent voice. Sit on a bus or train with an unlit cigarette in your mouth and a lighter in your hand for the whole journey. See how many officials and fellow passengers you can get to point out the no-smoking signs while you point out that you're not, in fact, smoking. If, driving on a motorway, persistently flash the car in front until he pulls over, then take your turn off. Stand by a zebra crossing, and every time a car stops, walk off. I know how annoying this is. People do it to me all the time. Lend a neighbour your lawnmower. Then 2 weeks after he's returned it, ask for it back. Repeatedly. If he sees you using it, insist that you lent him your spare one and keep demanding that he return it. If someone you know greets you in the street, pretend not to know them and threaten to call the police if they don't leave you alone. Shame a whole load of cowardly friends into signing up for a charity parachute jump with you. Then, don't turn up. Win the lottery, buy a beautiful castle, and have it stone clad. Having said that, just winning the lottery will probably be enough to annoy most people. Make up insulting acronyms for all your friends' names and tell them. PAC could stand for pompous, arrogant twat. John could be jerk off, huge nose. Del drives everyone loopy. Martin married a right tart in Norwich. The possibilities for annoying everyone you know are endless. Go around knocking on people's doors and asking them if they're happy with their washing powder. Buy one of those watches with a built-in TV remote control. Go round to a friend's house during the cup final and change channels every time it looks like someone might score. Keep buying your girlfriend really nice clothes that are one size too small. This is a perfect recipe for loneliness or, in extreme cases, death. Anytime you visit someone's house, insist on tuning in their TV and hi-fi properly. Make a complete mess of it, then leave. Chain-smoke cheap cigars in a vegetarian restaurant. Tell everyone you've given up cigarettes, but carry on smoking theirs. Insist on drinking large brandies every time someone gets around, and just before it's your round, go to the toilet for 20 minutes. If you finally have to get them in, buy yourself a half of lager. Then go back to large brandies when someone buys the next round. Slip a handful of banana-flavoured condoms into a married friend's jacket pocket. Whistle a loud, repetitive, tuneless song any time you're in a queue. Every time someone bends over near you, blow a raspberry. And finally, the ultimate annoying thing you can do to anybody. When someone stops their car at the lights, run over, smear dirty, slimy soap suds all over their windscreen, spread it around with a filthy sponge and demand payment for the service. If they refuse, scream abuse and make obscene gestures with your squeegee. Part 6. Food and how to do it. They say an army marches on its stomach. They say the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, which vis-a-vis bayonets is a certain cold steel ring of truth. However, enough inane babble. Food, where would we be without it? Probably out looking for it. They say a civilised person is only 4 missed meals away from savagery, and you can't argue with they simply because you might be one of them. While we're on the subject, who is it that decides who they are? Who is this them that chooses the they? That seems to have an opinion on everything under the sun. But more importantly, what's for lunch?
Which brings us rather clumsily onto the subject of this chapter. Food and how to do it. Along with sex, food has always been one of the two driving passions of the human race. Put a hungry man in a room with a roast beef dinner and a willing gale, and his eyes will dart back and forth like a tennis fan on speed while he tries to work out a sexual position that will allow him to eat and have sex at the same time. Food and sex will always be closely linked. The man that invented chocolate-flavoured condoms was no fool, if you know what I mean. I am, in fact, an expert with food, but sadly, only from the point of view of eating it. The chances of me entering a kitchen and subsequently leaving soon after with a plate of pan-fried scallops on a bed of rocket with balsamic vinegar and shaved parmesan are pretty slim. In the past, I have cooked meals that melted in your mouth, but that was before I discovered defrosting. Whatever. No chronicle of the human race would be complete without a selection of recipes that would allow the recipient of this book to create some of the finest dishes in the universe. The human race produced a number of greats in the art of cooking. Albert Roux, Egon Rone, Ronald McDonald, to name but a few. As the last remaining human in the universe, it would be my duty to pass on some of the culinary secrets of my race. At the end of the day, it's always best to write about what you know. Here's what I know. Listen to this chapter, and you'll almost believe a pan can fry. No laughing at the back, please. Glossary of terms. Cooking. To cook something, make it hot for a while. Then it's cooked. It's a doddle. I was amazed, too, when I found out how simple cooking is. Food. For the sake of clarity and brevity, the word food in this book means anything you can put in your mouth that doesn't kill you. However, there is an exception to this tenet, which you'll find in the section on sex. The kitchen. A mysterious place full of sharp, pointed objects, deadly gas-operated incinerators, things that go bing, and a big, cold wardrobe full of beer, which is the only true incentive for entering the room in the first place. Author's note. I didn't fight my way to the top of the food chain in order to eat vegetarian food, but for the many people who prefer this sort of cuisine, I've included a large number of vegetarian recipes, which are indicated by the letter V. For vaginismus. Recipes. Here are a few of my personal favourites. Sugar puff sandwiches. V. Ingredients. 2 slices of bread, a handful of sugar puffs, some butter. Spread the butter on 2 slices of bread, arrange the sugar puffs on the bottom slice, slap the top slice of bread on top, and eat. Food vindaloo. Ingredients. Food. Vindaloo sauce. Preparation. Cover the food in vindaloo sauce, microwave it until it explodes, then eat. Can surprise. Possible V. Ingredients. A can of food. Preparation. Remove the labels from a number of cans of food, select one at random, open it, eat it, and try to guess what it is. Chili sauce challenge. V. Ingredients. Chili sauce, lager. Preparation. Open a bottle of chili sauce and a bottle of lager and see how much chili sauce you can eat before you have to drink the lager. No fish fondue. V. Ingredients. Little bits of bread on sticks, brandy, and no fish. Preparation. Place the brandy in a bowl, making sure to include no fish. Dip the bits of bread into the brandy and eat them until all the brandy is gone. Then go to bed. Roadkill grill. Ingredients. Roadkill. Preparation. Run something over, grill it, and feed it to people you don't like. Top shelf oblivion sorbet. V. Ingredients. A dash of everything on the top shelf of the Medilab. Preparation. Mix the ingredients together and stir into a beaker full of ice. Inform the rest of the crew that you'll see them in a week or two. And drink. Beef Wellington. Ingredients. Some beef. A pair of Wellington boots. Preparation. Slice the beef into 2 thin steaks. Place them inside the Wellington boots. And walk around on them for a couple of weeks until they're tender. Then remove the steaks and hide them under the pillow of someone you don't like. Vegetarian veal risotto. Ingredients. Veal. Rice. Preparation. Cook the veal and the rice together, then eat the veal and offer the remaining rice to a vegetarian you don't like. Curry sauce. Curry sauce is the basis of all Hoh cuisine and can only be found in cans with curry sauce written on them. Ingredients. Curry sauce. Preparation. Open the can and cover any food you're about to eat with the contents. This will immediately render the food edible and bring you out in a sweat, which is the only way you can tell you're eating a decent meal. Bread. V. Bread is one of the staples in the human diet and is simple to produce. Ingredients. Bread. Preparation. Open a bag of bread, then eat it. For a gourmet meal, dip the bread in curry sauce. Bread can also be cooked, which makes it hard and crunchy. Cocktail corner. Of course, no gourmet meal could be deemed complete without the correct libation. The following cocktails are all vodka-based and should only be made using bloody good vodka. This is simply because it is the very best vodka in the universe and nothing whatsoever to do with a lucrative sponsorship deal I just signed, okay? So grab a straw and suck my cocktail. Slow, comfortable shrew in the park. Ingredients. A large shot of premium vodka. May I recommend bloody good? 200 millilitres of fresh orange juice, 100 millilitres of pineapple juice, a quantity of crushed ice. One shrew. Method. Pour the orange and pineapple juice over the ice. Let the shrew drink the vodka. Take it to the park and watch it being slow and comfortable whilst drinking the refreshing fruit drink. Carvery ball wangler. Ingredients. A bottle of bloody good vodka. Method. Drink the delicious, refreshing bottle of bloody good vodka. Go to a carvery, order the beef, and then insist the chef gives you the sweetbreads as well. The warming effects of bloody good vodka will do wonders for your dogged persistence, and the chef will eventually exceed. Congratulations. You and bloody good have accomplished a worthwhile wangle. Moscow mole. Ingredients. A bottle of bloody good vodka and a duvet. Method. Drink half the bottle of bloody good vodka. Burrow your way under the duvet like a mole. Drink the other half of the bottle and mutter to yourself in Russian. Screwdriver. Ingredients. A bottle of bloody good vodka. A carton of orange. A car. Method. Mix the vodka with the orange and pretend you're just drinking fruit juice. This will give people the illusion that you're fit to drive. This is not the case. A bottle of bloody good vodka is enough to screw any driver. Leave the car behind and get a cab. End of side 3.